This is the Hollywood Casino Press Box. Now back to Frank Cusimano on 590 The Fan and 590thefan.com.
Blues have the puck. Thomas off the wall. Shoots, and it's in.
Let's
they
go.
Score! It's the St. Louisan, Pat Maroon. Bring out the Zamboni. Pat Maroon just put the city on his shoulders, and he sends him to the conference finals. A 2-1 win in double overtime over the Dallas Stars.
With his belt buckle, he cleaned her cuts and then he prayed. Oh, Dallas, shine with an evil eye. Don't you know
certainly the most probably gut-wrenching game for the Blues postseason run. 2-2 in overtimes.
Ooh, yeah.
In playoffs. That was the double overtime Game 7 win over the Dallas Stars, which was on May 7th. That was already over a month ago. And Patty Maroon in double overtime off a rebound behind Ben Bishop off a shot by Robert Thomas that sent the Blues to San Jose.
Hey, again, there's so many that thing just triggers so many thoughts right away. You mentioned Robert Thomas, non-factor
right
in this series because of the injury
scratch last night,
and he was so dominant in the Dallas series, and you could see the 18-year-old becoming the kid that you know has all kinds of talent, and how good is he going to be moving forward? Obviously, the Patty Maroon goal where he's a legend. You know, we heard Ryan O'Reilly say we're heroes now. Well. Pat Maroon, one of that group, is a hero forever in St. Louis. He is right next to David Fries when it comes to St. Louisans who are going to just, look, every time you see him, you're going to want to shake his hand. You're going to buy him a beer. He'll never have to pay for a dinner in this town again. And you're right, the angst of that game. Blues were dominating the game. And remember, just prior to that, it was Ben with a wraparound that just misses, and you're going, oh, my God, the reality is we might lose the game after just dominating this thing, and then they win that game. Another part of what has just been an unbelievable series of storylines that are just you can't write it down. You can't make it up.
Scheduled to be joined by Terry Yake in about 10 minutes. We'll have the commission about 11:40. We hope to be joined by Frank Cusimano at some point. He was originally supposed to have a layover in New York around 10:30. That has since been delayed, so I'm not sure what his travel plans stand right now. But we go to the text line, 855-282-8255. This is a day for Blues fans, certainly. Spider Guy chiming in. Frankly, we stole Ryan O'Reilly. It's basically Tage Thompson and a second-round pick. What a blinking trade. Salty Pretzel adding,
absolutely.
Quote, the trade worked out well for Buffalo, too. Said no analyst ever. It's not a good time for Army to brag about fleecing another team.
Yeah, they stuck at the Buffalo on that one. But they, Chris Kerber mentioned to us yesterday, puck luck.
Yes.
This whole scenario, everything that you go down there is puck luck for the St. Louis Blues, and 52 years is a lot of puck luck their way, and it all came to fruition last night.
John from Webster Groves chiming in. I don't think I'll ever be nervous before a Blues future playoff game again. Finally seeing it happen and getting the monkey off the back can make me relax.
That's true. I told you yesterday, no matter what happens, I'm at ease with whatever happens. But now that we've seen it, the crux of where it's supposed to be, there's nothing that will ever happen. You can have 10 more Eisermans. I don't care. I am happy as can be. I'm never going to complain again because it finally happened.
Blues are not one of those teams, right, where future teams will point to. Hey, we're down in January, but look, the Blues did it.
Oh,
if they can do it, we can do it.
That's the poster board on everybody's locker room from here on out.
Yes.
Hey, remember that group? We can be that group. And you go, well, you're Buffalo, and you traded away O'Reilly. So, no, you can't ever be that team. But you're right. They are going to be the standard by which all bad teams are judged in January.
Yes, exactly. Read the Spider Guys, 314. I was born in 58. My dad had season tickets at the old barn. And too bad he's not around to experience this, 618. My takeaway from the handshake line was, and I kind of had this thought too, Halak still in the league. Ah, okay. Then looking at his regular season numbers, he was on par with, if not better than Rask. Obviously, I watch a lot of Eastern Conference hockey, 618.
That's a great point. I mean, there was a lot of, oh, Halak's there. I forgot about him.
Okay.
So how about David Backes never getting the sniff?
Backes had to sit for the last couple of games, yeah.
And he, he's sitting there going, I left that franchise because I thought I could get a cup here in Boston with a good group, and my old team just snatches it from me. What a storyline that is.
Big Mike, and we'll get into this tomorrow during the slop. Strick said 7 or 8 years. I think he said 8 years.
He did say the
Blues will win a cup, and I guess he was pessimistic. It seemed very optimistic at the time when he said it, and now it looks exceptionally pessimistic that they did it not even a calendar year after he said it.
Well, in reality, you go, well, it's been 50 already, so you would think the law of averages within the next 8 are pretty good.
Right.
And thank God it did happen.
Someone wants me to play the Ryan O'Reilly Sportsnet postgame interview. That will require some bleeping. Yeah. I will give NBC credit. People pointing out, I guess they didn't use the delay. I know people with kids will probably say they don't like that kind of language. I appreciate that unedited, unaltered, pure joy. The Blues hoisting the cup. A couple words were said that you would expect to be said when you are on the pinnacle of your sport.
It was 10:30, quarter to 11?
Right.
I get it, but you know what? That is a reality of life. It's said. Here's your teaching point.
Yep.
Teach your kids.
And like parents want to complain, hey, mute. You can mute.
You can change the channel.
We've all done it.
How many times did Blues fans shout that word in anger?
Yeah.
Over the last 40, 50 years to finally hear it, because it's a very versatile word, to finally hear it in a, oh my God, kind of context.
Yep.
We finally did it. It's refreshing.
It's true emotion.
Yes.
And that's, I was glad for it. You know, they said, well, sorry about that. Get on, move on. Yep. I mean, you see it mouthed everywhere, every sporting event you ever watched. You can't help but not see a player and go, oh, yeah, lip sync. Yeah, I know what he said there. So, I mean, there's your teaching moment. If you really want to teach your kids, you probably shouldn't say that. Let's move on.
Well, speaking of that word, one of our texters, the Imperial Impaler, last hour saying, Pat Maroon is a hockey prophet telling Boston, you guys are effed in game 2 of this series.
Yeah, I like it.
A little smack talk. I think that's to Brad Marchand.
Yep.
A little smack talk during game 2.
I like that. Nothing wrong with that.
Uh-huh. From the 314, the Stanley Cup run just erased decades of pain and frustration as a Blues fan. I will forever be grateful I witnessed this. Unbelievable.
True on that. That doesn't matter what happens from here on out. You got to see what you wanted to see. Like I said, we can have 3 more double overtime Eisenman losses, and I'll go, you know what? My Pat Maroon moment erases all of that. My Gunnarsson moment erases all that. The Manitoba miracle erases all that. You can play glory all you want. I'm happy.
Sports are a pretty terrible investment to make because the moments of happiness versus the moments of dread. It's tilted in favor of the dread, heavily in favor of the dread. But you need moments like this spring and last night for when moments of dread happen. Because they'll come back. It's just they're a bad moment will happen for the Blues to lose an overtime game 10 years from now or whatever, and it'll crush you. But that's when you go to YouTube and you type in 2019 Blues, and you just watch those highlights, and you just think, you know, it's happened before. This brings me joy. Maybe it'll happen again.
Yeah. Sports is a relief from our daily issues that we deal with. Like, look, what we're doing now, this isn't going to, ruin anybody's day or make it. It's a relief from everyday life that you deal with, that's real stuff.
Yep.
This is just a form of entertainment, and it makes you feel good.
314, wow, wow, wow. We got so outplayed in the first period, and it ended 2-0 Blues. I knew it was over then. Used to listen to Blues game in my bed after my parents told me to go to bed. Listened to the Monday Night Miracle yell that I woke my parents up. Dreams come true. Play Gloria. Play the Blues March. Go Blues.
Amen. I love it. Yep. I was listening in silence during that game, too. He mentioned the Monday Night Miracle. I was listening at midnight when Mike Crombeam scored in double overtime against the Penguins to win a series in 80-81. I mean, we all have those moments. This one will go down as the topper, though.
And I think what's great about this run, and it's always been kind of unfortunate for Blues fans when they would list their best moments in franchise history, there was always a yeah, but. Like, yeah, the Monday Night Miracle is cool. Yeah, but they lost Game 7. Yep. Yeah, but they lost in the next round. Hey, the Troy Brouwer goal against Chicago, that was great. Yeah, but they lost to San Jose two rounds later. There's no yeah, but. This is 2019 was great, period. Nothing else.
It's top
no
that.
No follow-up.
Nothing will top that.
And that's what makes it so great. The Salty Pretzel, my girl said, we've only seen you cry once before. Now I think they understand what it meant to me. This the Salty Pretzel, that was probably the one moment for St. Louis sports, and I'm not sure there's another one that would have made adults cry. I didn't go to Mizzou, so I don't know what a Final Four run would do for Mizzou grads or a college football playoff championship, if possible, or a SLU Final Four run. It would make Rammer and Earl cry, certainly, but I'm not sure who else would be brought to tears for that. But the Blues was always that. It was our Cubs, our Red Sox, our boy, what if? Imagine what happens if they win, how people would react.
Well, and part of it is, with that storyline and that emotion, is the years of failure and the years of support with nothing, you know, tangible to show, a cup in your hand. Well, now you have it. And, wow, just an awesome feeling.
I can't read that one. Donald Trump's Russian friend wondering if Stillman is okay. Needed a little help lifting the cup. I'm sure the emotions were getting the best of him. And good for Tom Stillman, a guy who stepped up to put together a group to buy the team and was never content with losing or never content with just making the postseason. He always spent towards the cap. Army gave him credit after every big deal that they made, always making sure to point out that Stillman, for a team that isn't swimming in money, they're not the Bruins or the Hawks, a big market team that's able to bring in a bunch of cash, they are kind of mid-market, and spending to the cap for a team like the Blues isn't easy. And they're rewarded this season with max home playoff games, I believe.
Yeah,
they played the most home games they possibly could, and hopefully financially there's a reward for them.
The thing about that celebration last night, because I was flipping around after the game was over, and NBC Sports Network had a lot. They kind of showed everybody picking up the cup at some point. And I never paid attention to it until last night, when I was like, where the heck did all these people come from?
I assume the same thing, too.
There are people grabbing the cup. I go, who are these people? And a lot of them were family and friends and dads and wives. But it was hilarious. I really took me a second. I go, where did they all come from?
To be fair, if I had known someone in the Blues ownership or front office, I'd be like, hey, get me on the ice. I want to hold the cup, too.
Yeah, absolutely. But it was just, at one point, I had to stop and I go, who are these people? And then it started playing itself out. This is somebody's dad. But at first, I was like, whoa, this is a little crowded out there on the ice. And how cool was it? We played Doug Armstrong earlier. To hear in the background, while that interview was taking place on the ice at the TD Garden, Let's Go Blues.
Yes.
Let's Go Blues.
I think I heard Play Gloria being shouted out. That was a very strong contingent of Blues fans made the trip to Boston, spent the money too. And I'm sure right now they would have spent, knowing the outcome, five times as much as they probably did to be able to experience what last night was. Let's head out to the Maryville University listener lines, where former St. Louis Blue Terry Yake joins us. Terry, I guess this is rhetorical, but how are you today?
I'm wonderful, but how dare you ever introduce me after last night without playing Gloria to bring a guest in?
That was the first song we played for the show. That's my fault, sir.
Oh, my gosh. This is it's absolutely surreal. I can't speak for, you know, everybody, but if everybody feels half as good as I do today, St. Louis is going to be a very happy place.
Terry, one of the coolest things about this run, never mind that it was a first time for the Blues winning the Stanley Cup, but seeing the alumni and how they've reacted to all of this. Kelly Chase and Bob Plager in tears. Chris Pronger, who works for the Florida Panthers, being in the Blues box, cheering St. Louis. You're an alumni. Just for you, what has the last 2+ months meant for you as a Blues alumni?
We, you know, all of us that played, we all gave everything we had to try and do just what they did last night. And, you know, unfortunately, we all fell short. You know, Chris Pronger got one in Anaheim, and Brett Hall got his cups elsewhere. But we all wanted to do it in the city of St. Louis. You know, that's why these guys still live there. They all think that this was our favorite place to play. This is why we retired in St. Louis, and we wanted to do it for the fans. I think last night with everybody, you know, at the Enterprise Center, at Busch Stadium, lining the streets all over the city and watch parties, the number of messages and the outpouring of support and everything from around the city of St. Louis, it shows why we wanted to be part of St. Louis. And to see this finally happen, it feels like some sort of redemption. If I can't think of a better word, but there's just a lot of pride and a lot of joy in the fact that these guys got it done, and that the city of St. Louis for the next 365 days can be called champions.
Terry, I'm curious. I'm going to say something here. Everything that we have been told on what's key to winning a cup, you could go, well, you got to have a good power play. You got to have a real good penalty kill. You got to win your home games. All these things were a non-factor in this team winning a Stanley Cup. You got to have a bunch of guys that have won a Stanley Cup and been there. That's not even a part of this team. I mean, everything that this group accomplished defied everything you were told were key to win the Stanley Cup. I mean, this is just an unbelievable story from that standpoint.
Well, it really is. And, you know, maybe the power play, I don't think at any time was wonderful. It was okay at times. It sure wasn't good in the finals. The penalty killing was good. But what they did have is some of the other features that always come back to being champions. They were unbelievable defensively. They got a great goaltending, two things you always hear from championship teams. And one of the things that's probably never been said and could be pointed out any more clearly than what the St. Louis Blues had is just their resiliency. I mean, this team was resilient. They were hardworking. They had the never-die attitude. They looked forward to the next game, whether it was a win or a loss. They treated them all the same. And it kind of started with the Jordan Binnington attitude, didn't it? I mean, this kid, when he lost, I mean, the comments that he makes when he lost or he lit in a bad goal or a goal that bounced on him, people would ask him, he says, well, you saw it bounce, right? It did. So I go on to the next one. But the whole team took on that mantra of, okay, next guy up, next game, we win the next one. As long as we're still playing, we still have a chance. And they did that all the way to game 7, all the way through the third period. Next guy up, just come in. They played great and continue to go. I don't think I've ever seen a team with that kind of resiliency have to go through what this team is. And history and the records would show it based on where they were on January 3rd to where they are right now. It's going to be really hard for any team to ever match what they did and the comeback that they made over the course of the last 3 months of the season and through the playoffs.
Terry, I'm going to ask a hyperbolic question, and the Blues are 12 hours removed from winning the Cup, so I think it's allowed. You mentioned Jordan Binnington's play, specifically coming off of rough performances, and I'm curious, you would have played against some really good goalies during your hockey career. Do you see any of Jordan Binnington kind of in any of them, like a Patrick Waugh? Does he share any characteristics to those guys?
I see him a little bit like a Marc-Andre Fleury, you know, who got criticized occasionally for maybe not, for letting in bad goals and having bad stretches. But this kid's run was, you know, less than stellar for the first 4 or 5 years of his career. I mean, he was down the minors, back and forth to the East Coast League, loaned to Boston last year. But he never really gave up. And if you look at Marc-Andre Fleury, he did the same thing in Pittsburgh. He had some bad times. They let him go, and then he makes the Cup final in with Vegas last year. But this kid is something else. I mean, the story alone for him may be the greatest sports story that I've heard of in the last 20, 30 years. I can't think of a better one. And, I mean, no disrespect at all to Ryan O'Reilly, but the kid should have been the Conn Smythe winner last night. In my mind, that was the only disappointment of the night. anybody could have got it. There were three or four players that were worthy, including Alex Petrangelo, Colton Parayko. You know, you could have made an argument for Schwartz as well. But at the end of the day, Binnington, to me, is the reason. He was the heartbeat of this hockey club. His demeanor was the heartbeat of the hockey club, and his attitude was what they followed, and it carried them from last place to a playoff spot to four absolutely amazing rounds of victories.
Yeah, there's a lot of people that agree with you on the Binnington thing. You never want to take it away from somebody else, but he was quite a factor. Speaking of the Game 6 disappointment to the Game 7 getting ready, how important, can you imagine what was done to try and keep the focus? Because I think some people, at least around town, were like, oh, we lost our chance at Game 6. I don't know how we'll win Game 7.
I don't know how they did it, to be honest with you. I mean, that's one of the most difficult things in sports to do. The entire city was on anticipation mode, including myself. I mean, I flew 2,000 miles across the country to come back and watch in hopes that it would happen in Game 6. It didn't happen. The disappointment was beyond belief. And, you know, for them to take that, channel it, put it aside, and come back and do what they did in Game 7 and play as well as they played, and especially for the kid in that, to be able to play as well as he played in the first period. Like, listen, we know Game 6 could have turned completely the other way, and the Blues came out and dominated the first 10 minutes of the game. If they had scored, it would have been a completely different game. And then it turns when they get Boston gets the 5-on-3 and scores. Well, last night could have been the same thing. If Jordan Binnington wasn't absolutely stellar in the first 5 to 7 minutes of that hockey game, making a couple of those saves, and Boston goes up 1-0, or heaven forbid 2-0, you know, with as good as those two teams were defensively, it could have gone the other way. And for them to be able to put that aside and then come out, get the lead themselves in a first period that they were outplayed, and then just absolutely play a borderline perfect game the rest of the night, I don't know how they did it, but that's the reason that team is champions, and that's the reason that this is one of the best Cinderella stories, comeback stories of my lifetime that I can ever think of. And I don't know that I could be any more proud to bleed blue than I am right now.
Terry A joining us in the Maryville University listener line. Terry, one last question before we let you go. Looking ahead, the Blues really only have two unrestricted free agents that they're probably going to want to bring back, Carl Gunnarsson and Patrick Maroon, especially based on the way that they played in the playoffs. Other than that, they're bringing back mostly the same team, a team that was among the best in the NHL from the beginning of January all the way through the postseason. This could be a window for the Blues of two or three seasons, don't you think?
Absolutely. I mean, this is, you don't necessarily have to make changes when you win the cup, and if you've got your roster as secure as they have right now, I think there's an opportunity for this team to come back and be what it was. Now, the question is going to be, can players like Steen, Barbashev, and Sundqvist be as good over 80 games as they were in the playoffs? I mean, those guys gave every ounce of energy. Sammy Blais running around hitting people. You know, as good as Robert Thomas was, I expect him to be wonderful next year and be in the top three or four in our team in scoring. But I think there's going to be, you know, there's going to be some questions of whether or not those guys can do it. But the good news is there's so many players on that roster that did it. If they play anything close to what they played in the playoffs, if they play like that in the regular season next year, this team can be a very dangerous team next year. And again, we all know all you have to do is get in. And with the intensity level that these guys showed this year, they've been there, they've done it, they could possibly do it again. I can't wait to see where we could be next season and hopefully through the next playoffs.
Terry, thank you for your time. Congratulations. What a run it was for the Blues.
Guys, wonderful. Play glory all day, guys. What a day, and I just say the glory is going to conjure up wonderful memories for the rest of our life every time we hear that song, won't it?
It certainly will. Thank you, sir.
All right, guys, have a good day.
That's Terry Yake, former St. Louis Blue, played for the team for a couple of years, was very much involved with Blues alumni and even Fox Sports Midwest for a while, so he was a big part of the organization for a number of years here in St. Louis.
As far as the alumni goes, and I don't think a lot of people realize this, not only is there a big contingency, and a lot of them showed up in the last two games to, you know, hey, be part of what's going on, it is one of the best alumni in the league.
Yes.
I mean, maybe next to the Canadians, it is the best alumni group in the league, and that's because the Canadians have been around since the beginning of time as far as hockey goes. But this group, they always show up. They are always bending over backwards to do anything they can to help in the community, to be part of what the fan base is doing and help out the organization. And that's what makes part of this thing even cooler. Those guys, Bobby Plager, you know, the whole list, they're hoisting a cup going, wow, we got one.
Frank Cusimano has been in TV for over, I think, 30 years. He's been in St. Louis for over 20. He's covered Olympics. He's covered World Series championships, the Rams Super Bowl. I'm deeply curious, given all the things he's covered. I'm sure he covered the Kentucky Derby when he was in Tennessee and Kentucky. Frank, was last night the first time you conducted a post-game show on ice?
Huh. That is a brilliant question. You know, it's interesting, Brian, because Tom Stasiak, our incredible photographer, was warning me before we get out there, you know what, this is going to really be scary. We're trying to get all these guys. And then, you know, the ice was so, like, beaten up that you could walk without fear of slipping. Because I know sometimes when you walk on that ice, you know, after a Zamboni machine, you're going to slip, no doubt about it. But last night, it was so smashed up, you felt like you were almost walking on grass. You were moving great.
Frank, last night, a night that Blues fans wondered if it would ever happen, and we spent a lot of time yesterday asking for predictions and picks to click, and it was almost unanimous, believing the Blues would win, but that it would be a two-goal win with the benefit of an empty net goal late in the third. No one thought three-goal win that starting in the third period, a game that never felt close.
Yeah, you're right. And, you know, guys, it should have been – Boston should have scored a couple of goals in that first period. And let's face it, that first period by Jordan Binnington was one of the greatest of all time for a Blues goaltender. And I think you could make a case for it being, you know, one of the most significant, you know, 25-minute time periods or 30-minute time periods, however long it actually lasted in St. Louis sports history. Because, I mean, if Binnington is just a normal human being and just a normal goalie, the Boston Bruins could have been up 3-2. He had three saves in about a 4.5-minute time span in that first period that really just changed the whole flow of the game because there was so much energy and the Blues were not getting shots on goal and it could have been 2-0 Boston. And then all of a sudden at the end of the period, it's 2-0 Blues and Alex Pietrangelo turns into Bobby Orr for 5 seconds in Bobby Orr's backyard. What an unbelievable moment that was.
Yeah, that's a great way to put that. And I don't know about you, Frank, but after that was scored, obviously Marchand, that's going to be talked about, the bad move he made there.
Yeah.
But I'll tell you what, I really believe in watching facial expressions. And right after that, it seemed like, to a man, everybody on Boston's bench went, uh-oh, we are in big trouble.
Yeah, and that's a great point, Jim. And it wasn't just the players on the ice. It was the building. As I like to say, it turned into the world's largest morgue, and it really did last night. I mean, just deflating. There were manufactured, you know, signs where they were trying to get the crowd cheered up. They showed a shot of Julian Edelman. They showed Gronk getting drunk, and they showed, you know, that strange owner of theirs, Robert Kraft, who somehow gets a huge ovation no matter what he does. You know, they try to do all this stuff, but it's like, who said this the other day? I think it was what Alexander Steen said. You know what? None of this means anything. It's what matters on the ice during those periods. And that's what happened last night. The Blues were the better team on the ice.
Frank, was last night, just after the game with the players and the alumni and the coaches, was that the most emotional scene you've witnessed after a game?
Brian, it's another great point. Ring the bell. Great question.
I'm going home.
That's what the celebration was about. It was about family. From Zach Sanford saying that when he lifted the cup, that he thought about his father who passed away at training camp. It was Bob Plager saying that he thought about Bart as he saw the players, you know, hold that Stanley Cup. It was Pat Maroon hugging Anthony, his son. The reason he is a member of the St. Louis Blues is because of Anthony. As we know, he had a better deal elsewhere. He decided to come here on a lesser deal so son Anthony could see him play. It was Ryan O'Reilly and the embrace with his father, the guy who made him the player he is. I mean, it was Joel Edmondson and his mom and dad. You know, they were they just remembered all the times they took him to the rink as a kid, and now their kid is a Stanley Cup champion. And, you know, the best thing, too, is the connection with the alumni. I mean, seeing Bernie Federko out on the ice, who did everything but win the Cup, to see Al MacInnis out on the ice, who did everything in St. Louis but win the Cup. And then, you know, then afterwards we were at the Marriott for the hotel, Marriott Hotel for the party, and Brett Hull hugging everybody, Tkachuk hugging everybody, Barrett Jackman high-fiving. I mean, you talk about a connection with the alumni and the team. You know, that's why, you know, hockey may not be the sport that I have covered the most, because if you're in St. Louis, you cover baseball the most. And then because of my basketball history, I've always, you know, loved basketball. But I'll be honest, and I said it to you, Brian, a bunch of times, hockey players are the best to interview.
Yeah.
They come from humble backgrounds, and some from Canadian farm towns, and they just appreciate everything in their lives. And so that's why it is the best sport to cover, and that's why, you know, that was the best sporting event I've ever covered in my 26 years in St. Louis.
I'm glad to hear you say that, because it comes across that way, Frank, in terms of if the Rams won the Super Bowl, you guys aren't going to get the same interaction with the football players that you would have gotten on the ice with the hockey team. I mean, it came across that way in watching the post-game interviews with you guys. It was more like you were part of it even though you were still a journalist. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it's a good point. You couldn't be – you had to be connected. Yeah, we maybe crossed the line in journalism, but what the heck, 52
right.
years, absolutely. And, you know, and then the owner, Tom Stillman, you know, making sure that Layla's up there and Tom just playing a – you know, that – I mean, we saw him before game five, guys, and he was shaking hands in the stands with fans he didn't know. I mean, that's Tom Stillman. That's connecting with the community and stuff. So it's incredible.
Frank, I think I didn't see any news about this on Twitter. I am curious, though, the meal last night. You were teased, a big springtime thing. What was it?
Well, they made it seem like a springtime barbecue.
Oh.
The good news is they did have some really fine brisket. They had some good brats and burgers. I mean, it wasn't like elaborate, but they did a solid job. So they probably overall win the food in the series, but I think I'd take the four games instead of the food victory.
Absolutely. Anything out of last night where nobody, we may not have seen it on Channel 5 where you went, this is pretty cool, a moment that you're going to stick
okay.
with you.
Yeah, I'll tell you what it was. So I guess we're interviewing Andy Cohen. And then, and, you know, and first of all, I probably should have told him he's on live. It's interesting that with Maroon and with Andy Cohen, the first question they asked me was, is it okay if we cuss? And I said, no, we're live television.
I mean,
please don't.
There was plenty of cursing post-game last night.
Yeah, we heard enough of that right after they were giving the cup. But so right after we got interviewing those two, Tom Stasiak panned over to the crowd, and I swear there must have been 250 to 300, maybe even 400 people in this one lower bowl area. And, you know, they actually could get on the ice, but they just were chanting nonstop, "Let's go Blues, let's go Blues." I mean, how humiliating is it for the people of Boston to not only lose a Game 7 at home, but to have these 300 or 400 St. Louisans kind of take over your barn, it was special.
Frank traveling back from Boston. I think he's in New York, which seems to be going the wrong way. But safe travels back, Frank. We'll see you back here tomorrow.
Yeah, by the way, I've alienated one of the customers here at the New York Airport Hotel. She's a Boston Bruins fan,
uh-oh.
And she just said, sore subject.
Oh.
They've won enough already. We deserve one. Yeah.
We really need it. But.
Oh, hold on. Let's put her on the air. What's your name, ma'am? Oh, you're a good Italian. So how did you feel last night, our Blues taking care of your Bruins?
It was pretty rough. We were really hoping to have another win, you know, just wrapping them up this season. But, yeah, it was some pretty rough stuff, and I think everyone was feeling it.
Well, another tough day for these Boston Bruins fans, guys. How about that?
And, Frank, before we let you go, just a little note from NBC Sports PR. St. Louis delivered a 60 share rating last night.
Oh, my God.
During Game 7. 60 Can you do you ever do you remember a number that high ever for St. Louis?
Well, definitely not hockey. I think some of those Super Bowls. I don't know. That's a great question. We're going to look into that.
That's high. Frank, safe travels back. We'll see you tomorrow.
Okay, guys. Take care.
All right. That is Frank Cusimano live from New York, I believe, is where he was. We have to take a short time out. Before we do, I want to mention Dr. Michael Jones, 1-855-260-EYES. Board-certified ophthalmologist, any eye care issues, give him a call. Tell him Frank Cusimano sent you. He's also an assistant professor at St. Louis University. Dr. Michael Jones, the commish on his way back from Miami. He'll be joining us next to talk a little bit of Cardinal baseball. This is the Hollywood Casino Press Box on 590 The Fan and 590TheFan.com.